Final case for argument, Hayes Lemnertz versus Ace Insurance. Mr. Price.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. This case is presented in a very limited legal framework. Ace agrees the Court is to decide the issue de novo, whether HLI's complaint survives a motion to dismiss. All doubts are to be resolved in favor of HLI, as set forth in the Tomeo case in this Court in 2008. The burden on HLI is to satisfactorily plead issues as set forth in Tomley and the subsequent Seventh Circuit cases in which this Court has said the burden establishes two small hurdles which are easy to clear. So the question to be decided by this Court is whether HLI's complaint gives ACE fair notice of what claims HLI is making and the grounds upon which they are based. However, the Court would not know this in reading the ACE brief, which expends exhaustive argument in an attempt to show that HLI is not the employer in this case and thus is not entitled to coverage. That is a factual issue which ACE can attempt to establish at the appropriate time when factual issues are to be resolved, but not on the issue.
Let me see if I understand. So ACE did defend it did defend one of the two HLIs, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And was that the subsidiary or the parent?
I believe it defended the subsidiary, although it agreed merely to pay half of the legal expenses. And
I'm sorry, what did you say?
Although it agreed,
defended, right? So the local company is the one it defended. Well, but it refused to defend the parent, which is the appellant, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
But in this suit, by the Rippingers, whatever that, you had denied that HLI, the parent, was an employer, right?
Well, Your Honor, all of this is improper evidence, which was attached to the first response to the first motion to dismiss. It's all evidence which is not properly before this Court on a motion to dismiss, which this Court has specifically held, are documents that are attached to the complaint, referred to in the complaint, or documents which this Court can take judicial notice of. This was an affidavit which was filed in the court below in the original case and was not properly before the trial court, is not properly before this court, and ACE made its decision before that affidavit was ever filed.
Well, I thought you acknowledged in your reply brief that at the end of your reply brief that the former counsel, page 15, HLI's former counsel may have been at fault for failing to properly advise HLI. I took it this was a reference to the fact that that former counsel denied that HLI was an employer.
Well, we did two things in our briefing, Your Honor. We said that these documents are improperly before the court and should not be considered. The second thing we did was attempt to argue that even if these documents are considered, all it does is create an issue of fact as to whether HLI was or was not the employer, and that is
clear under the workman's compensation law that HLI is deemed an employer, even though it's not an employer for many reasons, in the usual sense, but as an affiliate, it's deemed an employer.
Oh, certainly, Your Honor. As amended, the workers' compensation statute says they're joint
employers.
So there's
no real issue that HLI is an employer.
Well, there is no issue now, and we believe there never should have been an issue that HLI was the employer. and should have been covered by ACE.
So your lawyer denied HLI was an employer.
Well, Your Honor, that was an unfortunate circumstance that arose from HLI's refusal to accept the coverage.
What is ACE supposed to do? I mean, ACE wrote this employer's liability policy, and it defends the subsidiary, which is the employer. And as far as the parent is concerned, the parent is arguing it's not the employer. So what's ACE supposed to do? This is, you know, their argument that your position has the insurance company get into a fight with the insurance lawyer.
That's not what we're suggesting, Your Honor. All we're suggesting is that the initial time the notice was tendered to ACE, it should have accepted the defense of both HLI and HLI Huntington.
How can it defend HLI on the ground that HLI is an employer if your lawyer is arguing HLI is not an employer?
It wasn't arguing that at that time. It didn't file that motion until a month later. ACE made its determination on its own, and at that point, HLI was left with no alternative but to act upon its own and to have Barnes and Thornburg attempt to represent it. And unfortunately, Barnes and Thornburg made an error as to whether HLI was covered. It didn't read the amendment to the statute. And there is an issue that we're raising against Barnes and Thornburg in that regard, Your Honor, but it has nothing to do with HLI's duty, we submit, which was to accept the defense before that affidavit was ever filed and to, at the very least, tell its insured that the statute was amended and that that defense should be raised.
Well, once you're represented by a lawyer who's arguing that HLI is not an employer, I don't see what the insurance company is supposed to do.
Well, Your Honor, I'm attempting to make the point that that the insurance company made that decision before that affidavit was filed and before Barnes and Thornburg made this mistake as to whether the statute had been amended. And we've alleged that that ACE knew the statute was amended, and yet it refrained from accepting the defense and refrained from informing its insured of such fact, and that this is a breach of duty of good faith and their fiduciary duty toward their insured. And we were attempting to discover that at the time our motion to the motion to dismiss was granted.
Did the plaintiffs in the tort case ever bring a workman's compensation suit?
Well, this plaintiff was the underlying plaintiffs in a tort case sued many companies that were involved in this explosion, including HLI and HLI Huntington.
Yes, they ever asked for workman's comp against HLI?
Did they?
Yes.
Yes, and they received.
What's the status of that?
What's the status of it? They received workers' comp for 2 years before they brought this action against in response to a specific agreement that HLI was the employer and was paying workers' comp. But then, they're in an effort to get more money, their counsel sued in tort everybody, and that's where this situation began.
When they sought workers' comp, didn't ACE represent HLI?
It paid the workers' comp benefits, yes, but it refused to defend them against the claim brought by Mr. Dietz in this action, and we believe it should have under the workers' comp or the employer's liability coverage, which was in the same policy, and which said that if there are claims made against HLI not as the employer, then they're covered by employer's liability, and we don't feel that.
Of course, the complaint in the underlying tort case does not identify any of the HL companies as employers.
It doesn't say either way. It says they own the plant and they operated the plant, both HLI and HLI Huntington.
Doesn't mean that these people are employees, obviously.
Well, it does. There were no allegations that they were independent contractors or employers of anybody or employees of anybody else. And we told ACE that they were our employees. And Your Honor, I see that my time is up.
So, Ms. Murphy.
Good morning, Your Honors. Mr. Price, may it please the Court. I'm Siobhan Murphy. I represent ACE American Insurance Company. We are here today because plaintiff asked this Court to make two radical departures from Indiana coverage law. Plaintiff asked the court to find coverage based not on the underlying plaintiff's theory of liability, but rather on a theory of defense asserted by the insured, and in this case asserted by the insured only 2 years into the litigation at issue. We submit to the court that that issue is controlled by the COPCO decision.
What about Mr. Price's argument that when this suit was filed, you knew that HLI was a employer under Indiana workman's compensation law because you already defended the HL firms against the workman's compensation claims? So why didn't you tell ACE? I mean, why didn't you tell HLI that of course it was an employer also and you would defend it?
I think that mixes several different issues. I'll try to take them one at a time, Your Honor. The question of duty to defend under this policy depends on there being a covered claim of liability asserted by the plaintiffs in the underlying case. The underlying case was a general liability case, not a workers' compensation or employer's liability policy.
But I understand. These people had sought workman's compensation.
Correct.
And you had defended.
ACE did, in fact, honor the workers' compensation right. coverage.
So you knew everything. You knew that under Indiana law, all these HL affiliates were employers.
I think
so.
That
when this suit is brought, why didn't you say to them, look, we'll defend you because you know the two HL companies are deemed employers, but of course workman's compensation is the exclusive remedy against an employer.
I think it's a false assumption that anyone at the time that this occurred knew that the state of Indiana law might develop so that great-grandparents.
But you must have, because you defended their workman's compensation claim.
In fact, we defended the workers' compensation claim, which was a covered claim in a forum where the benefits payable under the workers' compensation law were due under our policy. The issue that is presented when Hayes argues about what the change
in compensations sought against HLI as well as against the subsidiary?
It's not a matter of record, Your Honor. And therefore
it's not a matter of record.
The truth is I don't know the answer to that.
The workman's compensation suit is a matter of public record.
It is, Your Honor, but as I stand here, I don't know the answer. I don't think the answer matters. ACE would have and did defend the workers' compensation claim against Huntington or against HLI. But it is a false assumption that the state of Indiana law was clear that a grandparent corporation was, in fact, an employer for the workers' compensation bar. That was a recent change in the law, and when the Indiana State Court addressed that issue as a disputed question in the underlying case, the Indiana Court ruled that, in fact, HLI was not the employer. So the first assumption in the question, which is did we know what that answer was, is false. That was a new issue of law, and lawyers being lawyers, predicting new issues of law can be very difficult. When it was a disputed issue.
What was the court that ruled that HLI was not an employer?
The underlying state court ruled that HLI was not the employer and kept HLI International in the case on the theory that it was liable as a non-employer. At the same time, it dismissed Huntington from the case, holding that it was an employer. And, in fact, the underlying plaintiff argued at length that HLI International was not the employer, had admitted that it was not the employer, and that a proper construction of that new Indiana statute would not extend to great-grandparent corporations like HLI International. So the one presumption that it was a clear issue of Indiana law, I respectfully disagree with. The other presumption underlying that question is a presumption that an insurance company that does not owe a duty to defend its insured somehow has a duty in Indiana law to interfere in the independent defense of its insured when that insured is represented by its own counsel. It had in-house counsel and outside counsel it selected. And it selected that counsel for the purpose of defending itself. position presented here is essentially that Indiana law would stop an insurance company that does not owe a defense and require it to pay the defense it does not owe. But there's actually only two situations in which Indiana law permits coverage by estoppel. Otherwise, the general rule is that is contrary to the purpose of Indiana law, which is that an insurance company should only pay for the risks that it agreed to pay for. The two situations where estoppel has been recognized in Indiana law are simply not present here. One is grounded on a misrepresentation of the nature of the coverage at the time of the application, which is the Manta case. And then in Manta, they recognized a second case. The second case is where the insurance company takes control over the defense of the insured without reservation of rights, thus prejudicing the insured by depriving it of its own right to control the defense. Now, that is clearly not the situation presented in this case. In this case, there's no dispute before the district court or this court that, in fact, the insured, HLI, controlled its own defense through its own counsel, made its own litigation decisions, and now regrets those decisions. It seeks to impose a new duty never before recognized in Indiana or in any other state where I could find, for an insurance company through its claims handlers to second-guess the litigation decisions of the insured. It puts an insurance company in a literal no-win situation. If we can be estopped for taking control of the defense and estopped for failing to take control of the defense, we do not owe.
What was the purpose, if you know, of the plaintiffs in the tort suit of naming the parent as a defendant?
Prior Indiana law had been that a parent corporation could be liable despite workers' compensation because they were not deemed to be an employer.
I see. So they thought even if workman's compensation was exclusive as to the subsidiary, it might not be as to the parent.
And, in fact, that is what they argued, which is in the materials we've placed of record. I do want to mention briefly that those materials were properly before the court, that they are properly the subject of judicial notice, and also that they were properly placed in the record under this court's decisions in Tierney and Mintz. In addition, the issue of the impropriety that supposedly exists as to considering those documents is raised for the first time by HLI on reply. But the court's consideration of those documents, his citation and quotation to those documents, is of record in the opinion appealed from, and if that were an issue to be presented to this court, it should have been presented in the main brief by HLI. There are three other issues, I think, that are also subject of waiver here. The first is the supposed admission that coverage existed in a document that was never argued below and is raised for the first time in reply. The next is the argument for coverage under Part 2 of the policy, which was never argued below and which we've addressed in our briefs. And the third is the application of a Florida case, Royal Oak, which we've addressed and distinguished, but in that case, the insurer did not dispute it owed a defense as to the negligence counts brought against its insured under Florida law. And applying that decision as if it were a decision that a theory raised in an affirmative defense created a duty to defend would be in direct contravention of Indiana law, which is governing here. So that to the extent that one were to overread Royal Oak as something it is not, you could not then turn around and apply it in Indiana where COPCO is controlling authority.
How much is the plaintiff seeking for its attorney's fees?
My understanding is that it is something over a few $100,000. I'm sure Mr. Price can give you a more detailed, but it is not a small amount.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'd like to invite any questions from the court. Otherwise, I think I'll take a moment to address Part 2 of the coverage, which, as I said, is a waived issue. But what's important is to remember that under Twombly and Iqbal, the plaintiff has to plead a plausible case of coverage. Now, though Part 2 was waived, there is no plausible case of coverage here applying Indiana law because the underlying complaint did not disclose a covered claim. And because plaintiffs allege no facts on which the underlying complaint would be read as having a covered claim, in fact, the very caption of the underlying complaint indicates there's no jurisdiction in the underlying court for anything that would be covered on this policy.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Murphy.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Price, how much time does he have? 1 minute?
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to try to address several things briefly. One is that this is a general liability claim. It is not. General liability policies exclude all injuries to employees, whether they're covered by workers' comp or employer's liability. That's the general exclusion. If there is no coverage under workers' comp and there's no coverage under employer's liability, HLI is left without any insurance, despite the fact it purchased two insurance policies. It purchased workers' comp and HLI, and it purchased general liability, but it's not a general liability claim. Secondly, I'd like to address whether COPCO is controlling.
Honor. No, don't bother us with that.
Okay.
It's true that you have several hundreds of thousands of dollars that you're seeking in attorney's fees?
Yes, there was.
Isn't your real complaint against Barnes and Thornburg for having muffed the defense?
Well, I think
they should just have said, look, covered by workman's comp, exclusive, you know.
But they should have said.
Done, right?
Yes, certainly they should have done
all
that.
All right, so they screwed up. I don't know why the insurance company gets blamed for this.
Because they screwed up equally a month before that, Your Honor, respectfully, and the fact that Barnes and Thornburg later made a mistake.
No, what
does
Ms.
not
Murphy
exclude.
Said was that, you know, it wasn't altogether clear what the law was. And so, and since the complaint didn't say these defendants were employers, Ace took the position it wouldn't have to represent the parent.
Well, where the amendment, Your Honor, says they are joint employers, we submit that the insurance company.
Barnes and Thornburg had discovered that and told them, right?
And if Ace had
a problem,
if Ace had told them, there wouldn't have been any problem either.
Well, Ace didn't know, maybe.
Well, maybe Ace didn't know, and that's what we attempted to find out in discovery. We alleged they did, and this is a motion to dismiss. We have to take the allegations as made that they did know about this amendment, and they didn't accept they didn't accept the defense, and they didn't tell us.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Price and Ms. Murphy, and the court will be in recess until 9:30.
Thank you, Your Honor.